Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Roxburgh House Roundtables. This is where, for the All Inspector Center, we discuss everything that is of interest to our college students as well as the community, often discussing political issues, sociological issues, and any other issues that our students want to talk about. So at this point, I'd like to give it over to Alexis, who will be your host today. Alexis.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alexis Stone. I am the president of the Asian Students Association, as well as I am on the board of Designers Supporting Designers, who I am in collaboration with today. So this roundtable will be discussing the cultural appropriation in design industry, focusing on fashion design particularly, but also related fields. This discussion aims to address the difference between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation. We will also including a minor critique of how other cultures and groups are represented and incorporated in design courses here at Jefferson. I would also like to introduce the Designer Supporting Designers Board.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rebecca Shustak, and I am the DSD president.
Hey, everybody. My name is Medea Trudeau-Williams, and I am the DSD vice president.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michaela Day. I am the event coordinator for Designer Supporting Designers.
Hi guys, I'm Bree McFarland and I am the mentorship coordinator.
All right, so just really getting started into what exactly is cultural appropriation. So just looking at, you know, the textbook definition of it, it is taking an element or a part of another culture, usually not majority represented, without their consent. So I also want to talk a little bit about how it's evolved and its effects today. So the main examples of cultural appropriation are really seen in clothing and artifacts. And it was historically first seen in culture diffusion. So culture diffusion began because of colonization and also the fact that there are several communities that just happen to be geographically next to each other, and they start to just pull inspiration from each other. So that's called direct diffusion. In the case where you have two communities that are working together and taking inspiration from each other versus forced diffusion, which is more of a direct effect of colonization. So starting there and then moving to what we see today, where in social media, in fashion design, in styling, makeup, hair, there are so many new parts of cultural appropriation, such as, for example, there's fishing, such as, you know, Black fishing, Asian fishing, where you have non-members of that community alter their face or body to appear more like a member of that community. And that's also called feature appropriation as well. And then next you really have people culturally appropriating for personal gain and profit. And that's where we really start to get into design. So designers, companies, people who are taking elements from other cultures, not reinterpreting it as their own, but rather just claiming it as their own. So on that note, why were acts of appropriation accepted before and not called out? Because as a lot of people see today in social media, there have been more instances of calling companies, brands, people out for cultural appropriation. You have cancel culture, which is a new wave of really focusing on these acts as well. And I think the most simple explanation is really that minority groups weren't able to have platforms or a voice really to express their feelings. And in addition to that, the world is becoming increasingly globalized. However, you still have themes such as the Western eclectic traveler or just the glamorization of, you know, world travel and really being able to indulge in cultural traditions, for example, but not fully understanding the meaning behind them. And I really want to talk about how this history of cultural appropriation and how it is today really affects designers and consumers. So how does it happen? It starts with inspiration, of course. As a designer, and I'm sure all of my designer friends can also vouch for this, we all are inspired by the world and everything that we see. However, it takes more than just inspiration to design. You really need to research. You really need to learn exactly what you're being inspired by, not just because it looks pretty or it fits what I'm looking for. Currently in design, we have a lot of, in the industry, people who are, again, taking elements or details of what they like rather than taking the entire context or providing context of what they're taking from. They're claiming things as their own. They're also, you know, sometimes bashing the source of inspiration and saying it could be cheap or tacky, but they're also like at the same time, like knocking it off or again, claiming a version of it as their own. And it really becomes problematic when people don't admit that they've been influenced by other people or cultures or other cultures. And this also continues into feeding cultural appropriation into consumers. So I think we can all agree, whether we are designers or not, we are all consumers. And for example, as a consumer, if you see a brand providing you something, you might think it's okay to buy it because the product is out there and you like it. However, it is important as consumers to do our own research and to learn more about exactly why we're buying. You know, transparency is key. And that goes, again, for both the designer and the consumer in terms of what product you are looking at. So I just kind of want to pass it over to some of the other DSD members as well, if you have anything you'd like to add.
Just on the topic of, you know, if we're talking about cultural appropriation within design, as a fashion designer, I think that there are many collections that we can look at that have walked down a runway where you can clearly see like a lot of these elements have been taken from different cultures, and it doesn't always look correct. It doesn't always look like artistically done. It looks like they just took something and really knocked it off. And this quite often happens a lot in America with Black culture, especially in consideration to streetwear. Streetwear is a type of fashion design, a type of style that was created mainly by like lower to middle class African-American communities to create fashion and clothing that they felt fit their style, but was not as expensive as high-end garments. And now, you know, when you look at what streetwear has gone to, where like from the roots and the history of it, it has completely kind of like changed. If you try and kind of discuss the origins of it, sometimes people will even like boldly knock off full like looks that individuals have done, smaller artists have done, mostly people of color have done, so that they can use it for Louis Vuitton, so that they can use it for, you know, Nike, so that they can use it for whatever the ends to the means is, because they really feel like it's not even just that it's a source of inspiration, but they don't really consider when making that decision that these people are artists, they're artistically driven. They use their creative ideas to possibly make a living, and a multi-million dollar company ripping off their design is going to hurt not only their business and their livelihood, but also it's going to make them look like they're less creative. Who has more credibility in a situation? A really small artist who probably has no connections to the industry, no way in or out, like, and no really understanding of like the laws behind like suing people for knocking off your designs, or a multi-million dollar company who's established, who's probably been around for more than 50 years, you know, who has a team of lawyers to tell them what they can and can't do, and what they can and can't rip off. I also think a lot of the time people will culturally appropriate and then kind of double down on it by saying, oh, no, no, this isn't cultural appropriation. This is cultural appreciation. And I think that is actually one of the most insidious ways to do things, because it's people who don't know anything about the culture, but they're saying, I appreciate it because I think it's pretty. They have no cultural context. They have no history to back up what they're doing. And once they were, you know, called out on it, they said, oh God, I have to fix this. And instead of just saying, I'm sorry, I did something wrong, they're going to say, well, actually, I'm just appreciating the culture. You just don't like the way I'm appreciating your culture, you know? And I think that's like a very, very large problem within the industry.
I agree, Medea. And thank you for going more in depth into how it not only just harms like our community, but like other communities as well. And I think that's great, especially with some of your examples. And I actually would like to present a couple of visual examples as well, because I'm sure we all have a basic understanding of cultural appropriation, but sometimes it can be a little hard to pick out as well visually. So I have a couple examples here that I can show you of instances in the fashion design industry where cultural appropriation has taken place. I would say this is one of the more notorious examples here. Christian Dior designed a collection in the early 2000s in which, as you can see, many elements were taken from Asian culture and kind of just meshed together. Again, without really any context, just for the fact that it looked pretty. And also, again, they were mostly using models that were not Asian. So they were using makeup and hairstyles on these women. And this was one of the larger controversies in fashion in the early 2000s. And as you can see, this is a little more extreme here because you're seeing him take traditional elements of clothing. However, sometimes it can be a little more subtle and people don't quite realize that this is also cultural appropriation here as well. So this is designer Isabella Marant, and she was called out for taking indigenous elements of design and putting it in her own work. And this happened recently as well, but you can see in her details, you know, like you can tell that her inspiration was majority of the indigenous patterns. However, that's not correct. And this also goes into styling as well, such as the Marc Jacobs fashion show where the hair was appropriated from minority communities, specifically the Black community, as you can see here. So it's not just clothing, it's styling as well. And we'll definitely go into that a little more later in the discussion, but here's another example of hair and accessories where cultural appropriation has taken place in the fashion industry. And I would say one of the largest offenders in the fashion industry is Victoria's Secret. They have held many fashion shows where they are sexualizing minority communities. They are using incorrect, like as you can see here, body art to kind of, I guess, represent an indigenous community, but they're not even, it's just not very correct. And I would say one of the most controversial fashion shows is one where they were doing a fashion show in which each model represented the month of the year. And this was November. For, you know, Thanksgiving, they had a model wearing traditional headdress and jewelry. And again, sexualizing and appropriating indigenous culture. As you can see here, a lot of the examples that I found are from Victoria's Secret fashion shows. And I think what's even worse about this part of the fashion community as well is that this is the intimates sector of the fashion design community in which a lot of those products are sexualized. And to cross over, you know, inspiration from other cultures in this category, I think is so disrespectful, and it very much hurts those communities and cultures. Again, more examples from Victoria's Secret. So these were just a few examples that I wanted to share with you, but I also want to open it up to the floor too. I would love to hear people's personal experiences with cultural appropriation, because, you know, it's not always on a high-end fashion, you know, level. Like, I believe that we've all seen enough more of it in our daily lives as well. So if anyone would like to share, you're more than welcome to.
I can definitely speak to more of like a textiles aspect of it. My family is from Central Asia, and the Ikat fabrics are like, they come right from Central Asia, and a big proponent of kind of spreading that pattern is Uyghur Muslims who originate from Central Asia. So recently Ralph Lauren came out with their summer collection, which uses those traditional Ikat fabrics, and they claimed that they were giving credit to who, like, the originators of the design. But in reality, they were just lumping all of Asia and the Middle East together and kind of use it as a scapegoat. And if you go through their Instagram comments of those posts, you'll probably just see me and my cousins all over being like, this isn't right. Like, this is not who you're taking from. Because the big issue with that is Uyghur Muslims are currently being, I guess, oppressed is a very light way of putting it, by the Chinese government. And they're actually, like, a lot of the slave labor that comes out of like East Asia is with with the use of Uyghur Muslims, and the fact that it's very likely these very same people who are making these garments for Ralph Lauren, meanwhile, they're not even getting proper credit and they're getting no benefit from it. And it's for this major company that's just benefiting from like what I grew up with is just like, eventually I think they got enough backlash. So they finally gave proper credit, but it took weeks. Like, if you go back, you can see they edited their captions for all these posts.
Thank you for sharing, Lola. I actually had no idea about that. And you're correct. Kind of referring back to what I was saying earlier in terms of like bashing the source of inspiration, a lot of these elements or designs that are, you know, taken from these communities are usually designs or elements that those communities get made fun of for, or, and that's like, again, you know, the nicer end of it. You know, a lot of these communities are discriminated against for a large number of reasons, and it usually always goes back to appearance. I think historically we can all agree that those are, you know, that is something that people will talk about and comment on first is appearance. And that is a very important part of cultural appropriation as well. Just thinking about, you know, things that have happened historically, like in the US, like for example, after 9/11, anyone that was wearing any type of dress, like that wasn't maybe even a part of, the community that was being targeted. It was like people just lump other people together based on appearances, based on what they're wearing, and just because they look different. So that is definitely a really good point to bring up. Does anyone else want to share anything?
I think I agree with everything you guys have been saying. A big part of it boils down to like disrespect and like the lack of education. I feel like people don't take the time to really learn. I feel like especially like this past coming couple years, I feel like I've seen in social media a lot of girls like getting prom dresses with like Asian fabric, and people will say like, oh, it looks so pretty on her, it looks so good, but it's kind of mimicking like traditional Asian clothing, and they don't take the time to learn like what it is or why. It's disrespectful, and they just like kind of get defensive real fast, like, well, no, because this is my prom dress and I get to wear it, blah, blah, blah. But they don't know the cultural meaning behind it. But if like an Asian girl were to wear that dress, they would just kind of make fun of her culture and make fun of her. And I also feel like the whole thing with sexualizing different minority groups like cultures is really dangerous, especially like personally for the Asian community, since there is that stereotype of sexualizing Asian women. So that becomes a real danger too.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Diana, would you like to say something?
Yeah, I want to add on to what Ashley was talking about. I totally agree that sexualizing like Asian female is extremely bad, especially what happened, if you guys remember from last year with the nail salon, how there was a shooting with a mentally ill white male, and he was like, oh, they were coming up to me and being on me, but basically all they did was like working and doing their nails. And then he was excused it most of the time, saying that he was like mentally ill, wasn't that in his right mind. However, the Asian female are still dead in the end. And so I feel like that's kind of like hurting, especially Asian society as well, for feminizing women and having the yellow fever for women as well.
That's a great addition to what Ashley said. And again, like I agree with both of you. It is it's honestly kind of terrifying how minority women are fetishized and sexualized, not even within the Asian community, but others as well. And again, you know, a lot of these issues aren't deeply rooted in history. However, you would think, you know, it is the 21st century. And with all of the knowledge and education that people do have access to, who would know better. And also on that note, I think that it is so interesting how cultural appropriation is still widely spread today, considering that you can literally Google anything. And it is so easy to, again, gain access to those resources to educate yourself. And honestly, I was doing a lot of thinking about that when I wanted to create this roundtable. And I really wanted to facilitate this discussion on why do we think that people aren't doing research? Like, because we have the resources now. So what is the reason why we are still not doing research? You know, both again, as designers and consumers. And it's a conversation I really wanted to open up to get perspectives, not only from designers, but people in other disciplines as well. And I personally still don't quite know the answer. I know there's a lot of, Timothy, would you like to speak?
I would love to. Thank you. First, thanks so much for doing this. And I have a question. I was a little bit late. I apologize for that. So if you talked about this, I very much apologize. My question is, this is very helpful, your conversation. So are you saying it's not so much that the fashions, well, in the example, are being used in a fashion show, but it's appropriate to do them respectfully and correctly? Is that what we're looking at here? As far as, so if it's in a fashion show, the problem is sexually, you know, using it in a sexual manner or not doing it appropriately. I just want to make sure I completely understand. Is that accurate?
I'm having a little bit of a hard time understanding your question. So I'm sorry, can you reiterate your question?
Yes, sure. So in the example of using it in a fashion show, should it not be in the fashion show? Or if it's in the fashion show, it needs to be...
I think you got cut off.
Alexis, I think I know what he's getting at. He got frozen. This is Evan.
Am I back now?
Oh, yeah, you go. I was going to speak.
Okay, I'll ask one more. I'm really sorry. So if should it not be in the fashion show? Or if it is in the fashion show, it needs to be done correctly and respectfully.
Thank you for the question. So I understand that. So I think it depends, I believe, on the context as well. So we haven't quite gotten into cultural appreciation yet, but that would be, you know, taking inspiration respectfully. So like you were saying, the alternative. I would say there can be a good balance of both. I think there are definitely some artifacts of cultures that are, for example, religious that should not be used at all. However, there are some parts of cultures that I believe can be used respectfully. So I, like, for example, I think that certain textiles could be utilized if given proper credit to those artisans and communities. And also, it's also a matter of like working with those communities, you know, like just taking inspiration from something and then like purely just creating it on your own. And yeah, sure, you can say, oh, I was inspired by this, but I feel like you're not really forming a connection with that community that adds value to your work and adds value to the products that you're making, you know. And in the context of just a fashion show in general, which are usually, you know, they're meant to grab attention. And that's why a lot of those pieces that I was showing as examples were used, is because they're not, again, not exactly what they're selling. It's used to frame and call attention to what they're selling. So in most cases, that's why they're so dramatized. And like the example of like the one girl with like an entire dragon on her body. However, using culture, you're using culture as a prop then, which is very disrespectful. And I believe that there is a better way to do that rather than also like taking it out completely.
Thank you so much. That's very, very helpful. I appreciate that.
Thank you for your question as well. I think Kira, you raised your hand. Would you like to add?
Hello. I think what you said was pretty spot on, because this is what I was thinking in my mind as you were saying it. But I know like this past semester, I'm taking sustainability. And so we kind of also focus on like basically giving back to communities that you're inspired by. And I researched this one company, which I feel like I'll just use it as an example, but they're called Studio 189. And so they basically print like African textiles on garments and basically have fashion shows showcasing like African, you know, heritage. But at the same time, they use like artisans from Ghana and also help with like environmental regeneration over there, because it's like been ruined by textile waste, and also give back to like the education and the schools over there. So I feel like in a way, if you're going to use a culture, then do it in the right way, in a sense of where you also uplift that culture in the process, if that makes sense. So providing them with opportunities, either with jobs or helping like various problems that they may have like in that country, I feel like is a way. Cause like they're still, I think Studio 189 is more of like a platform basically for these people. In a way they do still benefit, but it also helps basically put these artisans on a platform and give them a voice. So in a way, they're like the face of like their own culture. And I think that's the right way to go about it. Yeah.
That's really great to hear. Thank you for bringing that up. And actually, just so everyone knows, so the sustainability course that she's talking about, it's called Sustainable Design. It's a fashion design course for third years. And that's where we usually start to dive in about the sustainability sector of fashion design. And actually, it's such a funny coincidence, Kira, but I know what project you're referring to, and I also did Studio 189. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And I agree, I think another part of cultural appreciation, sorry, now is also giving those communities a platform. And that was like a really key thing that you said, having these communities able to express their voices and their work through a brand, I think is really important, because obviously we can't just not take, you know, I think that as designers and just how the world is, like how global we are, we're always going to be inspired by each other. There's always going to be inspiration from other countries and other cultures. Again, it's all just about how you do it. Medea.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted to answer a little bit of Timothy's question while also going into your question, Lexi. So a lot of the time when I consider cultural appropriation, I think about who's telling the story, right? So when it comes to design, a lot of times there's concepts, there's multiple different boards. You have like a very long line of inspiration. This inspiration isn't just like a flower, right? Or it's not just like wood. Like, it's not going to be what your inspiration is. Your inspiration, a lot of the times, is telling a story. And though that doesn't apply to every design major, it does apply to a lot of them. And I think that when we consider who is telling the story when they go and they present a fashion show that is showcasing a certain religious iconography from different cultures, who is telling the story when we present a culture and sexualize it, right? Who's telling the story and why are they doing it, right? Are they doing it because they actually want to appreciate the culture, or are they doing it because they feel like it's a really great way to shock people into looking at what they are doing? Because a lot of the time, social media makes things popular, especially things that are shocking, especially things that are negative. And a lot of the time people are going to gravitate towards it, even if it is bad press, right? So good press is all press, right? And I think that's one of the issues that I think that's why people don't research, because it's not about the research. It's not about the intention. It's all about shock value. It's all about maybe the aesthetic that they're trying to achieve. And I think a lot of times there is simple Google search to know what is okay, what's not okay when looking at cultural resources of inspiration. It's really easy. I've done it before. Other people have done it before. And I know that they have successfully incorporated cultures that they are not a part of into their design work without offending people. And I know that it also, it doesn't have to be, there's also a middle ground. It doesn't have to be perfect appreciation, like working with every single artisan in the world and like, you know, making everything perfect. It doesn't have to be that all the time, but it can be as simple as not doing a faux pas, not messing up that kind of, or that culture, not disrespecting people. And I really do believe that it is, a lot of the examples you showed are larger brands or larger companies. They're established. A scandal from a minority community is not going to hurt them in their mind. So when they look at the aesthetically pleasing thing they want to do, or when they think about how shocking it'll be when their models are wearing whatever they're wearing, or like even one of a brand that I personally was a very big fan of did braided wigs, cornrows on fully white people. And they had no black models, right? So they did just, they created wigs off of black hairstyles that are not even, the reason they needed to make wigs is because you cannot braid a lot of people's hair because it's too fine in that style, unless you are African-American. So they created wigs so that they could knock off that. And then it created shock. And you look back at it and nobody considers that brand to be canceled. No one considers that brand to be, you know, really associated with a lot of negative press, because the truth is they don't care and they don't really need to a lot of the time. And I think what Jefferson can especially do is course correct for the designers of the future, because a lot of the time people are designing, looking at designers now going, well, they don't do research and they do things for shock value, so why can't I? And that's just not the way that it can be in 2022.
I completely agree, Medea. And what you said about the shock value, I didn't really even think about that initially, about thinking more about it, I think what it comes down to is also the lack of empathy that we're seeing in today's culture, not even just with own designers, but with, you know, younger generations sometimes, with how media is being used, how just in general social media exists. There's a very strong lack of empathy with designers, with consumers, with people literally, like you were saying, not caring. And it ties back a little into fast fashion as well. I know this isn't, because you know exactly what we're talking about, but fast fashion exists for people to literally go through, to buy things, have it rip in a day, or to wear it once, throw it away, and then buy something new. And that starts to go into other products as well, such as single-use plastic, single-use items. And you start to create this mentality within people where it's like, I'm going to buy something and then throw it away and not think about where it came from, who made it, what it's made of, how it affects me, just the fact that I used it and it's gone. And that mentality can really be applied to this conversation in terms of why culture appropriation, I think, exists still today. But also building on to what Medea said in terms of what Jefferson can do, I wanted to speak about a course that we have in our fashion design program called Fashion Design Research. So going into Jefferson as a fashion design student, your first year majority includes courses that are your hallmarks and your design foundation courses. Fashion design research is going to be your very first class in which you get introduced into the concept of fashion design and how to fashion design. And as you can tell, it's a very, very important class, and it's very integral to building who you are as a designer. And we have a project in that class. It's actually your very last project. It's called the Going Global Project, in which the prompt is that you choose a country and you design a collection based on it. So again, this class is about, you know, just honing your initial research skills. However, from my experience, I've realized it can be very difficult to separate cultural appropriation and appreciation kind of just that early in your career, especially if you have not really been exposed to it before and because you are focusing so much on your skills. And I really believe sometimes it's not clearly stated how to appreciate cultures versus appropriate cultures. And I think that's something that's really important and that could change within our program. It's really starting in that first initial class. And I know, like, so all of us here on the board of DSD have taken that class, and we've all had, you know, different experiences regarding it too. And I can say that we all agree that some changes could be made to the course. For example, more research can be done in terms of that project. Like, for example, Rebecca, her final project, which was actually really amazing, she went into really in-depth research about the country she chose. Becky, if you want to talk a little more about
that. Yeah, I can definitely speak about that. So come from a Polish-German background, so I chose Poland as my country for the final project. I didn't know very much about them, so that's why I wanted to do such in-depth research. And within that, Poland does have some dark spots in its history, and that's when things started getting a little muddy in terms of what I could pull from for inspiration. And I think through that experience, I learned that when doing our research and we do find these dark spots or these certain aspects of the culture, we do kind of have to weed through, pick and choose which parts would be appropriate to be inspired from. And I think that starting out with freshman year for any design discipline should be heavily, heavily research based, and just learning when to stop going in certain directions and when to start picking up when it's appropriate to use cultural aspects in your inspiration, and kind of how to use those aspects in a respectful manner. Yeah,
thank you for sharing that, Becky. So with that being said, I think also, you know, at that time in our design career here, you know, we're still new, we're freshies. We don't quite know everything yet. And I think it can be a little scary too, sometimes, you know, when you're doing research and you come upon some of these darker subjects. And of course, I'm not speaking on behalf of everyone here, but it can be hard, especially when you don't have someone helping you and telling you it's okay, to realize that something you're researching has both positives and negative impacts, parts of it. And it's really up to you how you take it as well, and making sure that what you're doing is correct. That's something that I would love to see change in our program. Currently, we are having more classes added, for example, a diversity course. However, again, I think it really needs to start from the beginning. Like, building a strong foundation will allow you to be a better designer. And like what Medea was saying, like, a lot of young designers are looking to current designers. And if they're not, you know, doing the correct thing, like the young designers aren't gonna do the correct thing. So it's important that the classes we take are teaching us the right thing.
I just wanted to mention, as a student of color, specifically African-American student, I also think going through that project was especially challenging because, and I've talked to many people from many different fashion design classes, as well as some other design disciplines, where when other cultures are brought up when discussing design, it can feel a little bit like we're taking advantage of the people without their knowledge. And I think people don't always consider that their classmates are some of the people that they are researching about. Some of those cultures, some of those aspects that you are thinking about designing are very sacred to the people that you're sitting in class with. I think it alienates a lot of students of color to see their cultures or other minority cultures talked about in very kind of like scientific dissection kind of ways, not really celebrating the aspects of their culture that they hold very dear to them, but in fact, kind of picking apart what they choose and what they think would fit best for their concept without doing a lot of research. Specifically, this past semester, sadly, one of the classes was doing this project, and the girl who was presenting used a slur for the people that she was researching. And the professor didn't know that it was a slur. They didn't know that it was offensive to use that kind of language. And it's very difficult because it could have been avoided, right? That research that you could have done could have avoided that situation. And a student of color, I think, did approach that professor and say, hey, that is actually a slur that you're using for that person. Another instance would be, and it, of course, this was not an approved project, but a girl came in with a project where she wanted to use the aesthetics of the slave trade for her project, chains and shackles. And she was white. And I think that that kind of situation where that teacher obviously immediately knew, hey, you can't do this, talk to her, but that student didn't know. And that really did hurt a lot of the people of color in that class and make them very uncomfortable to be in space. And I think that, especially with design, especially with inspiration, there's never going to be the perfect situation. There's never going to be some, like, there's never not going to be a time where people make a mistake. But it's about how many mistakes we make, and it's about how we go about trying to avoid them. Because if we just try and let them happen and then course correct them afterwards, that is still alienating a lot of people of color. And that is still making a lot of people of color in the design field, which is already a very, very low percentage for people of color to go into. And they feel very unwelcome in the industry in a lot of cases because of this and many other reasons, right? I would think that there's things we can do to stop it before it happens, to stop it before it starts, you know? So I just wanted to say that because not only just that class, but also we have a history of design classes, right? And I'm not sure about other majors, but I'm sure that you guys are encouraged to research past designers. And we have just recently integrated about 10 designers of color into our design history courses within the past 2 years. And to see that we mostly had only white designers being shown as examples also plays into that cultural appropriation thing, because you're not seeing anyone pursue a career that looks like you, that comes from a similar background to you, that you can kind of say, okay, I can see myself in this industry. And that's also a problem. And I think it's really the way we talk about these things. And it's how we kind of really think about empathy. Again, what Lexi said, it's empathy, I think, at the core.
Thank you, Medea. Michaela, did you have something to say?
Yeah, just going back to when we have those types of classes, especially with that assignment in particular, since I also participated in that assignment, there was no discussion of cultural appropriation or appreciation. And it was just like, pick a country and go. And that comes from such a place of privilege to think that you can just pick a country and run with it. And it would be great to see in any design class having this discussion. I feel like should be required in every design class, regardless of the level of your professor's knowledge. We are all always learning new things about cultures, what is appropriate and what's not. We can't all be experts on every single culture that's out there, but we should always be able to open up that conversation and not have our POC students have to say something about their culture and put them in that uncomfortable position. Very oftentimes it is the POC students that have to say something instead of a professor taking initiative to do research. They often just trust their students to be making appropriate research, which referring back to the story that Medea said about a student using a slur and not realizing it, and same thing with the professor, that nobody was fact-checking the student. A lot of the times when we start a design project with a concept, there is nobody fact-checking us to say this is appropriation or this is appreciation. And I feel like it doesn't matter the professor's background, that you are capable of doing research as a professor to say, like, okay, is this going to be appropriate and is this true? And I think that is the main issue that we're having, is there is no dialogue in design amongst people who hold that privilege because they just don't think of it. And now that, like, things are changing, they, even in this position of privilege, they have to have these discussions and not expect the POC students to spearhead it.
Thank you, Michaela. And I agree with both what you and Medea have said regarding the courses. So just letting everybody know, we have a few minutes left for the roundtable ends, and I would like to open up the space for anyone else who has questions. Or if you have anything that you would just like to share in general, feel free to share it now.
I think another, excuse me, aspect of cultural appropriation that often goes overlooked is the way we present ourselves through makeup or just our facial features as well. Because we always, like growing up, at least for myself, I always strive to have like smaller lips, lighter skin, thinner eyebrows, especially was a big one because I always grew up with pretty thick shaped and like just dense eyebrows. And I was told I always have like caterpillar eyebrows, and I'm like, because I'm brown, I'm hairy, you know what I mean? And I'm really big on makeup, and a really big trend in makeup the last few years was big, thick eyebrows that look a lot like what I grew up with and I tried so hard to hide for most of my life. And seeing that and seeing these girls who have maybe like half of the eyebrow I have really like dramatically accentuate like what I was naturally born with, it's kind of difficult because it's the same girls who are making, it's not even just girls, but the same people who are like making fun of me for what I naturally have. But in a way now, I don't know, it's a weird in between, because a lot of the stuff that we were made fun of for as children is becoming fashionable and is becoming trendy, but then there's also that aspect of forgetting the fact that we got made fun of for it and now just to get over it because now it's being appreciated.
That's a very good point to bring up, Lola. And I touched a little bit about that in the beginning. What you're referring to is feature appropriation, which is very prominent, like you're saying, in today's society. Again, with social media, I feel like we're seeing all of these new trends that are coming out that are really just referring to a lot of minority facial features or just beauty in general. And that's something that I feel like can definitely be addressed. Thank you for bringing that up. Last call for questions. If anyone else want to like to add anything.
Yeah, I would like to.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead. You go ahead.
Sorry, my Wi-Fi cut out, so I'm not sure if you addressed this, but I'm a first year fashion design student. And I'm currently taking the fashion design research class. And I wanted to let you know that they did incorporate that the teacher was supposed to present about cultural appropriation versus appreciation, but it wasn't really done effectively. And myself and other students have noticed issues with it still in the class. So I think they're trying, but it wasn't necessarily successful.
Thank you, Kate, for letting us know. That's very important. And well, honestly, that's why we're having this conversation. But thank you for letting us know. As DSD, you know, we're always here behalf on all design students, and we definitely will work hard for change to happen. So Becky, you were saying.
Yes, I just wanted to say that thank you everyone for coming. And I hope that through this conversation, people feel more comfortable with bringing this up and to not be afraid to speak up and question other students, question professors when they see things being slid under the table. Like even if you are not exactly a part of that culture, you can be an ally to that culture by speaking up and saying, hey, have you checked with them? Have you done your research for that to make sure that what you're doing is okay? I think as being a design student, it's important for us to work together to keep this conversation going, not only between students, but also with professors. Kind of bringing everyone together and keeping everybody on the same page and learning from each other on how we can combat this issue.
Thank you, Becky. And I definitely agree. I think we all as students and, you know, just people, I think it's important for us to speak on this. And for all of my design students here, you know, we are the future designers and it's up to us to change the industry. And I fully believe that we can do it. Again, thank you everyone for coming today and speaking and participating. This was a great discussion. I'm very glad that I got to talk about this with everyone. And thank you to Professor Evan Lane for allowing me this platform to talk about it. Thank you everyone for coming, and I hope that we can continue this discussion.